She is going to talk about an integrated data collection approach, the game changer in state vision surveillance.
So I'm not really speaking for myself here today. I'm speaking for the National Center on Children's Vision and Eye Health. But as far as disclosures, I'm referring to myself. I'm an optometrist, and I sit on this committee as a member of an expert panel, and I'll go through that a little bit more in, through my slides as we go ahead. I just want to kind of bring us back to why we're all here, why we're at APHA, why we care about being in this room today. So I want to quote David Satcher, who was a former U.S. Surgeon General, that says, "In public health, we can't do anything without surveillance. That's where public health begins." I want us to remember that, because a lot of what I'm talking about brings up that philosophy, but that we need the numbers. We need to know where everything's at. Reminding you, those of you who've been out of school for a couple of years, that surveillance has a very specific definition. And those of you who are brand new clinicians probably are very much aware of this. Public health surveillance is the systematic, ongoing collection, management, analysis, and interpretation of data followed by dissemination. There's lots of pieces of this definition that come together to really define what surveillance is. And it's used to stimulate public health action. It's very exciting that we have a lady in the audience who cares about that advocacy piece, the policy piece, because no matter how good we are as clinicians, we can't make a difference until we really bring it to the next level about advocacy. And data is really used to estimate the scope and the magnitude of a problem. I bring that up because much of what I'm going to talk about, that's where the gaps are. And this could include whether it's a geographic distribution or a demographic distribution. We've heard about different racial disparities, African Americans and Hispanics. I'm going to bring up the age disparity. And all of these pieces of information will help us facilitate a public health planning process where we hope to change things in the future. For our purposes today, I want you to think about the mechanisms as it relates specifically to children. Our focus for the National Expert Panel was really on children. Much of the surveillance that takes place in the United States is really addressing adults, most of them 40 and older. There is some reference, small reference, to kids from 12 to 39, but not much that's out there for kids who are less than 12 years of age. So currently, there's no uniform standard approach to documenting children's vision and eye health problems. I think we're all aware of that, and we know that it's a challenge for many reasons. Oftentimes, the things that we refer to are vision screenings. That's typically what the public health step is in order to identify whether a child's at risk. And we use the data we get from vision screenings in order to make some assumptions about the prevalence of disease, unless we look back at some of those very expensive randomized clinical trials that have taken place in the United States. We do know that vision screenings alone do not lead to earlier diagnosis and treatment necessarily. The screening in and of itself does nothing more than identify a child who's actually at risk for a vision problem. And there's little data that's available on how many children have failed a screening and subsequently access comprehensive eye care, and even less data on the population level of vision screenings. We have lots of people quoting numbers. We have lots of vision screenings that go around the United States. Every state has a different philosophy. There are some organizations like Prevent Blindness that are working really hard to have some uniform approach. But the challenge is we all do it differently, we record it differently, we share it differently. So there's a lot of gaps out there in surveillance. The other piece is vision screenings classically have been paper-based. You know, we've all been around vision screenings where the child takes a piece of paper from station to station, and then at the end somebody fills out another piece of paper and gives it to the person who brings the child, and that piece of paper hopefully goes home to the parent, and maybe the primary care or the vision provider will see it. But the reality is the paper-based program is predominantly what we've done in the past. We know there's some new technology, and if you go to the exhibit hall, there is one called Plus Optics that has a system that's somewhat technologically based. But the reality is it's not a software program that really goes beyond the unit itself. It's very select to the information to be retained in it, and maybe downloaded in a software file that could be integrated into Excel. But it's been challenging to be able to collect all this screening information and to make recommendations. There are some computer programs. I think iSpy has a system where it actually downloads into a computer-based program, but it has little communication ability beyond that software piece. It may be able to talk to the schools a little bit, but to integrate it into a student health record has not been demonstrated yet, as far as I've seen. There may be one or two incidents where they've worked on it, but it is not something that's really being advocated. This type of a design is beneficial really internally. Within the school system, within the community program, there is a very limited process. A number of years ago, Prevent Blindness worked on trying to develop a more universal approach, but it's very challenging for many reasons, whether it's manpower or accessibility and interoperability, whether it's money that takes in order to have it. So currently we do not have a mechanism for the data, for any data source to be accessed beyond what the screening program has. Maybe a school district limitation, but not beyond that. Many of the software programs that are in existence are designed to share information based on their own screening tools, yielding many ways to describe data. That is, it may lead to a lack of standardization as to how the data is collected and shared. One program might be simulating a visual acuity program, another program might be a photo screening program, a third program might be an auto refraction or a wavefront aberration. There are a multitude of pieces of information that are being collected in screening. And finally, you know, and this I've kind of alluded to a little bit, is there's often limited interoperability between the output and the school health or the electronic medical record. That's the next step. That's to tie it into the medical home. While many of these things have changed over time, we still haven't resolved all the problems. And for many people over the past year, just moving to an electronic health record in their actual clinical care has been a challenge. They're not concerned about how they're going to communicate outside the office. So we have lots of battles ahead. So currently some of the challenges we're experiencing are many children receive multiple screenings from many sources. They get it at school. If they're in a Head Start program, we all know within 45 days a child needs to be screened. There are community-based programs that are out there that offer screening. And the problem is, no one's really aware whether a child was seen in another program or in their program and whether they're duplicating the efforts. But not only that, what happens if they passed in one program and failed in another one? The question is, what is the parent supposed to respond to? So there's lots of duplication of efforts that are done. There's lots of redundancy at a time when we know that our resources are quite limited, whether it's manpower resources or financial resources. So this is certainly an area we can improve, and we really should be doing a better job. Current software programs offer little insight into how to monitor whether vision screening failures have been followed up. That is the next big challenge. You might do a great vision screening, and we might have agreed on how we're going to do it based on some guidelines that the National Center has shared, but now what do we do with that information? How do we ensure that child who's been identified at risk actually gets to the resource? This has been one of the biggest challenges we've had with vision screenings over the years, is we do a great job with screenings, but the kids don't get to the next step. Without this final step, that appropriate diagnosis and treatment cannot be initiated and completed. So the National Center for Children's Vision and Eye Health gathered a group of experts in fields that dealt with vision in children, and that would have been, that included optometry, ophthalmology, pediatricians, school nurses, parents, government representation, and experts in other vision-related fields. A group of people who were very knowledgeable about the literature and the research that had been done, and brought them all together to address primarily a specific age group, the 36 months to just under 72 months, and to make some recommendations to ensure a better screening program and then the follow-through. So, and Kira Baldonado is the executive director of this National Center currently, and is one of the reasons that this actually got to the level that I'm able to actually stand up here and talk to you about it. The expert panel that was brought together had three outcomes as of January of this year. Three very exciting outcomes, because when you bring all these different people into a room and you try to get them to agree on anything, it's very challenging because we all come from different perspectives. And we were able to sit down in three different groups and come up with recommendations. And I'm going to talk about the first two just to give you some insight, and the last one is really the focus of what I'm going to share right now. The first two were recommendations for vision screening guidelines for children from 36 months to just under 72 months. that will ensure that we're all screening in the same way. The next piece was we made some recommendations for performance measures for primary care providers of children from 36 months to just under 72 months, because there needs to be some mechanism to ensure that the medical home evaluates whether a child has been screened or not. There needs to be some check and balance system. And then the piece that I was involved with and care a great deal about is the recommendations for an integrated data system to include vision screening data for children in that same age group. All three results have been published this year in the Optometry and Vision Science Journal in January, and it's open access. So if anybody is interested in copies of these articles, this is the place to go. So why did we come up with an integrated data system? Well, when we sat down and talked about the importance of sharing information, we came up with lots of ideas. We all talked, we needed to have something that just had vision. Well, the problem is if you have a vision database, no matter whether it's state level, city level, or national level, nobody else but the vision care providers are really going to be looking at it. So we felt that we needed a better system. We also felt very strongly that there needed to be a standardized mechanism to collect data. There needed to be a standardized method to report data. So data collection might be what kinds of information you're collecting, including the screenings and the protocols and the information about the child. There needs to be insurance for data reporting that it all goes into the same system. Then there needs to be a process in whatever system that's created to have a tracking mechanism that will tie that vision screening into failure, into a mechanism to ensure that there's a diagnosis and treatment. And that diagnosis and treatment may be spectacle correction, it may be something else, it may be just following them. We all know that screenings aren't perfect, so there needs to be some follow-up to ensure that everybody involved knows that circle has been completed. Why an integrated system? We want to improve communication for all interested parties, which includes, but it's not limited to, the person who's doing the vision screening, the parent. Most systems don't really include the parent in any type of data system. We felt the parent is an important entity. The primary care provider, who's the person who's going to make sure they see that child on a regular basis? It's the primary care provider, whether it's well child care or other things. And then it needs to include the eye care provider. Typically, eye care providers sit in their little silos. They enter their data in their EHR. They tell the parent what's going to happen. And no one knows what has happened in that exam. And this is one of our other challenges, because we want to know that piece gets back to the primary care doc. So if there's additional services, like if you have a child who potentially is amblyopic, the first step is correction. Sometimes it's resolved. Sometimes it's not resolved with glasses. So we know that there's additional care that's involved, and that's one of the things we wanted to tie. We wanted to really develop a system that would reduce duplication of efforts. Time is very limited with everybody. We want to make sure if the child's already been screened, the pediatrician doesn't necessarily have to screen them again, but the pediatrician may make that recommendation as to where they should follow up. We want to improve compliance and accessing service after the failure, and we want to build a system of surveillance for children's vision and eye health. It's important so we can report what the prevalence of vision problems are. State-level screening data needs to be entered in a very uniform data. So one of the things we looked at is our goal was to ensure we followed the national guidelines put out by the National Committee on Vital and Health Statistics by following the National Health Information Infrastructure Guidelines. And the good things that the system would need is it needs to support individuals in their own health and wellness. It needs to ensure providers have complete and accurate access to patient data. And it needs to have improved surveillance. Any surveillance in children's vision and eye health is going to be better than what we have already. The challenge we have is that providers don't necessarily have information. So the recommendation from this group was data from vision screenings needs to be entered into an existing integrated data system by child or have the opportunity to be uploaded as a group after a screening, because not all the screenings are oftentimes done in places where you might not have internet access. Vision screening results should be able to be viewed by the primary care provider as well as the community programs to know that it's been done already when the screenings have been completed. This will ensure better coverage of kids, and this will reduce the redundancy and duplication of efforts. The next piece is the eye care provider needs to be able to enter data relating to the outcomes of the comprehensive eye exam, including the diagnosis and treatment recommendations. So if I'm the school system, I want to know if that doctor recommended glasses for that child to be worn in all the time. I want to know if that child's supposed to be sitting in the classroom with glasses. Running a school-based vision clinic, I know oftentimes the kids that I give glasses to, they last about a month, and then they see them next year, and you say, well, where are your glasses? Oh, I lost them right away. Well, I want to know that everybody knows what needs to be done. The primary care physician can also monitor if the child needs any additional care and ensure that the parents understand what needs to be done, and any follow-up care that was suggested is included in their recommendations. So it's all about bringing everybody into the loop with the vision screening. We know the essential health care benefit is including vision. The Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act really introduced vision exams for children. That's really an excellent move to ensure that children have access to eye care. Data from eye exams is expected to be integrated into electronic health records. Being a clinician, while I see the value, I don't always agree with it on those days when I have 50 files to finish. National NHII expects that most electronic health records are going to be able to communicate with other systems and thus be accessible minimally by the schools and the medical home. However, you need to make sure that we protect everybody's privacy. The panel recommended that vision care data be integrated into a system where other child health data already is being done on the state level. An example of an existing data system that includes child data is the statewide immunization database. This suggestion would expand the immunization data information systems to incorporate visual screenings and exam information. The advantages of a system like this would be to ensure that children would all receive vision screenings where appropriate. It would remove the duplication problem. It would monitor the continuum between screening and eye exam for the primary care doctors or the nurses. You know, we know that a lot of these kids are being seen by PAs and in school-based health programs. The ability of the vision care providers to enter data into the child's health record and to monitor when the follow-up was done. These are all advantages. And we will, and it also gives us the mechanism to always have a chance for the primary care physician to reinforce all that's been done. Characteristics of an effective child vision health system would include that vision screening should be accepted from any of the sources that provide vision screenings. The primary care physicians and the eye care providers would also be able to enter data and to view the other pieces of data. There's one piece that I don't have up here that's really important is the parent would also be able to view this. They wouldn't be able to change anything, but they would be able to view whether it was done or not. And the data will need to include child-specific identifiers, unique identifiers, to ensure that the data is correctly linked. So data entry will be controlled by HIPAA and FERPA. We need to make sure that privacy is maintained, and the system needs to make the ability for the family to view all of this information so they know that it's there and they know all the individuals that have the ability to view the system will see that information. We believe that the system should include all these pieces, unique identifiers, screening date, screening site, title of the screener so we know gives a little validity information, provider's ID, visual acuity test used, testing distance, stereopsis, instrument-based screening outcomes. We also want the system to be able to say, if a child was not screened, why was the child not screened? An important piece. The National Center agreed, everybody on the expert panel, that children with neurodevelopmental disorders, children with systemic diseases that require some surveillance, children with on medications that have some vision side effects, and children with preterm births less than 32 weeks should not be screened. They should be referred directly for a comprehensive eye exam. And the important piece about that is many times there is a lot of confusion between eye exams and screenings, and you want to make sure those children at risk for vision problems are going to be seen. Other people that are oftentimes not screened are those with a recognized eye abnormality. Anytime there's any redness, any eye turning, blatant abnormality, that child should be referred. If there's relevant family history, if there's any parent concerns, if there's a prior exam recommending follow-up. You know, while we don't have glaucoma issues coming with children, you know, oftentimes the situation if, well, you're on your medication and your pressure's good, that doesn't mean you stop taking your medication. So oftentimes people need that educational piece by the eye care provider. And lastly, the kids who are not screened because the parent has not provided consent. Very important, we never screen children unless the parent or the legal guardian actually gives us consent. That should be entered as well. The other pieces that we want to know is, did the child pass the screening? Were they referred or were they considered untestable? I think pass and refer are pretty straightforward. The untestable are always the challenge. The visual and preschoolers study gave us a lot of information that said children who cannot complete the vision screening process are more likely to have vision problems. So it would be likely, you know, if the person doing the screening doesn't feel a little education will help, they should be labeled as untestable and oftentimes maybe referred directly. Eye care provider data should be the basic information about the exam, who is the doctor that provided it, what was the date, what kinds of outcomes did you have, visual acuity, was there a diagnosis of amblyopia strabismus, were glasses prescribed, when should they be worn, when should the child follow up again. Very important information because that piece is a very big part of what when we have children's vision issues. Some of the considerations that we are concerned with are the additional burden on healthcare providers. We may need some incentives, we believe, in order to get doctors to participate. We feel this is really important to develop a good surveillance system, and the big issue is who's going to pay for it. That's always the bottom line. And we want to make sure all privacy is complied with. So thank you very much. I hope I've shared some good information about what we hope. Maybe someday we'll actually realize the success of this recommendation. So thank you. That was not one of the questions the expert panel responded to initially. Initially, it was that children between 3 and 5 should be screened and that any type of referral should go to an eye care provider. Any of the ones that fit into the categories of known issues that are potentially high-risk kids should be referred directly. The question about how periodic should be left to the doctor who's going to actually examine that child.
Yeah.
Oh, how often? We didn't address how often vision screening should be done. In the city of Chicago, the state, many times the states make recommendations. Since we're only talking about 3 to 5 year olds with the national panel initially, CPS does kindergarten, second grade, fifth grade, and ninth grade. All depends on how much money is available. Every state has a little different recommendation. They have different recommendations on what they do, how often they do it. I think that would be one of the things that the National Center should take on next. Right, Kara? Chris, you had a question too?
I'm curious. I mean, I've been here for Tornado there at CBS a few times. What's your experience there versus what you hear out in the broader community as far as the Medicaid payer mix for school kids?
Totally different subject. So my clinic is all low-income clinic. We see about 6,000 Chicago public schools that fall into the poverty level. I would say right now 74% of the kids that come into my door are actually covered by one form or another of Medicaid or one of the MCOs, MCEs that are out there. And it changes every day. One day they're on one, the next day they're on another one. It's a little hard to keep up. The people who are not oftentimes are my families that are not health literate. They don't trust government. They may not be here legally. So it's very difficult for me to generalize my experiences beyond that. I think insurance is a big issue. Nothing has changed in the makeup of the children I'm seeing with the addition of the essential health care benefit. I'll have to be honest about that. It's about the same number of kids on Medicaid as not, but the state of Illinois had kid care, which supposedly every child in the state of Illinois had access to eye care. So, unfortunately, I've not seen any changes.
Thank you.
I would hope other people have. So I don't know. That would be somebody. I don't know if somebody's talking about it in one of the other sessions. But good question. Other questions? Yeah.
Could you give some data on in a screening of school age, and maybe you can break it down more? What would be the percentage of that should fail?
So that is, I actually don't know that data. I would say that the prevalence, you know, in the 3 to 5 year old group, you should be picking up those amblyopes, or the ones with the amblyogenic factors. So 2 to 4% should fail because of that. In my clinic, we see about 16% convergence insufficient. So you're covered, you know, depending on what you're doing on your screening, you'll pick those guys up. Myopia starts to develop about the age of 9 years of age. So if you do distance visual acuity from 5 and above, you'll see increasing numbers of failures as you go on up. The exact numbers, I can't tell you because it's going to vary depending on your population. I have a large Hispanic population, so to see 4, 5, 6 diopters of astigmatism that's not been corrected is not unusual, sadly enough. So I wish I could give you numbers, but, you know.
The reason I ask is very difficult to judge whether your technicians are doing a sufficient job if you don't know what their referral rate should be.
So the visual in preschooler study is probably one of the best way, large-scale studies that looked at multiple sites. And that was optometry and ophthalmology, so it was a nice mix. It was well-designed. It looked at Head Start children and vision problems. Now, yes, it's a high-risk population. It's not a random population, but it's probably the best one out there, and they did the gold standard eye exam. And I don't have their numbers off the top of my head, but it was you're looking at refractive error, you're looking at amblyopia, 2 to 4% is probably, if you include those neurodevelopmental disorders, you know, you're going up to 25 to 40%, depending on what population you're dealing with. Those are lots of unknowns, and I know places where they want to hear those kinds of things to be able to answer those questions, and from your mouth to somebody who's got money to be able to support that research, because I think those questions are the questions we need to answer. How do we get them? Who should we see? When should we screen them? Is screening sufficient? Is there an insurance that the people who are screening them know what they're doing? Because while you teach them once, doesn't mean they remember it time and time again. So a recertification process, the National Center is very concerned about making sure that vision screeners are recertified on a regular basis.
I agree.
So.
We have one more talk, so I want to make sure we have time. Thank you so much.